Huffington Post has reported that bagels can cause lung cancer. That's just amazing. I didn't know that fried dough could be harmful to you.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I thought fried dough would be great.
Whatever.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. I mean, seriously, what did you think you clicked on? I'm Ron Van Dam. For those of you that may not be familiar with me, this is who I am. Hello. You can also hear me on some Boston radio stations on weekends. Hello to you, too. I'm not going to go into that. Welcome to the program. Yeah, since that bagel lung cancer thing, the Huffington Post just today came out with an explanation saying, oops, that was not accurate. It's not bagels that cause lung cancer, it's smoking. Oh, I often get confused with those two things. I often light up a bagel by mistake, and oh no, that's a bagel, not a cigarette, oh no. The study was flawed, they say. Bagels are indeed not good for you. But the study did not take into account those that may have had diabetes. As you may know, if you are somewhat intelligent, and I assume not, as you may know, if you have diabetes, bagels contain this glycemic index, and as soon as you take a bite of a bagel, the sugar index, glycemic index, like goes through the roof. It's like, boom! I'm going to have a bagel, bang, glycemic index goes up. So you get sick and it's not good for you. And other factors they did not take into account, those that had pre-existing conditions, bagels being fried dough as they are can certainly make it worse. They didn't take that into account in this study. So the study concluded that bagels give you lung cancer. And the Huffington Post very clearly pointed out that if you've never smoked, your chances of getting lung cancer are significantly lower. And if you never smoked but you had bagels every once in a while, the increase in possibility of developing cancer rose just a little bit, but nothing close to as if you smoked cigarettes. So kudos to the Huffington Post for correcting something they should have never said to begin with. You crazy fools. I love bagels. Who doesn't like bagels? Raise your hand if you don't like bagels. I can't even see you. Don't even bother. If you just raised your hand, you're crazy. You're crazier than I could ever be. Because a guy talking to you through a speaker cannot see you raise your hand. I know that you have all these theories, these conspiracy theories, that in your audio speakers are little cameras and the government can see what you're doing. Let me tell you something. The government probably doesn't even want to see you. The only thing that you do significantly is change your underpants once a week. Beyond that, no one really cares what you're doing. Unless you're having sex with your wife or your girlfriend or your lover or your husband or your lover in front of a speaker specifically, that's worth watching perhaps. That's worth putting a camera in the thing. But chances are when you're doing the chicka bow wow, you don't have an audio speaker shoved in front of your face or whatever. Although maybe you do. I don't know. How'd this turn into a sex program, by the way? I think you started it. I think you're, because it's your conspiracy that there's all these cameras inside of audio speakers, which is ridiculous. Hey, baby. It's time to get it on. It's time to get the groove going. Let's remove our clothing and do the wild thing. But before we do, let's point those speakers in another direction. What do you say, man? Come on. It used to be that phrase that Big Brother was watching. I never understood that. Who is Big Brother? Was that supposed to be the government? Or is it indeed your Big Brother who's just like a little sick? You know, my Big Brother, Gary, he's in the next room. He likes to watch people have sex and he likes to get into people's business. Big Brother is watching and his name is Gary. Or it could be Big Sister. It could be Bertha. She could be in the next room as well. Because the older sibling always has a fascination of being a voyeur, as you know, as you probably know that. And by the way, turn your speaker away from yourself right now. So raise your hand if you like bagels. Ooh, Ron, that took a long time to get back to that, didn't it? Yeah, it was like 5 minutes. Raise your hand if you like bagels. Everybody raises their hand. And see, here's what I do, because I am health conscious, even though I know bagels are horrible for you. They are rings of dough, literally rings of dough, that they drop into hot boiling oil for a period of time, and then they take it out and they eat it. And hot boiling oil is probably not your best choice for a cooking method. Just saying. But we all love the bagels. Oh, we all love the bagels. But we don't stop there, you see. The bagel's bad enough for you. What we do is we split it in half and we fill it with even more crap that can kill you. How about cream cheese, which I call white paste plastic? Cream cheese and spackle look exactly the same to me. As a matter of fact, if you ever run out of spackle and you've got a hole to patch on your wall because somebody put their elbow through it or something like that, or you went to hammer a nail into the wall and it just chipped the wall to pieces and the plaster, go to the refrigerator, get some cream cheese, and put it on the wall. That's what we call a wall with a schmear. And that stuff will dry hard like it does in your arteries, and you won't know the difference between spackle and cream cheese, I guarantee you. And consequently, if you run out of cream cheese and you do have bagels, bagel and spackle is a wonderful Jewish thing. A little bagel, a little spackle, a little schmear spackle on your bagel, and you got yourself a wonderful holiday. Then we take lox, which is smoked salmon. And again, we have the word smoked in that. And the smoked salmon, and we add like 2,000 milligrams of sodium into that. And we put that on top of the spackle. And we eat the bread that was boiling, the dough that was boiling in hot oil. And we eat it and we go, this is healthy. Well, it's not healthy. Just saying. When I eat a bagel, and I rarely eat a bagel because I know what it is, once I figured out what the bagel is actually composed of, I stopped eating bagels. But if I do, I will not put crap on it. I'll just have the bagel plain. And it's a little bit of a problem when I walk into a donut shop where they have bagels and I say, I would like a bagel just the way it is. They say, what are you talking about, just the way it is? I don't want anything on the bagel. You don't want anything on the bagel? It's like they're amazed. It's like I'm creating some type of a horrible crime that they have to call in CSI or SUV. No, that's a vehicle. SVU. I don't know the difference. Oh my God, there's a guy here. He wants just a bagel without any crap on it. I can't. What are you, crazy? What are you from another planet? You don't know that you're supposed to put spackle on it? I'm sorry. I don't want anything on it. What are you screwed up or something? How dare you come into our establishment and order a bagel and have nothing put on it whatsoever? Do you understand we have light cream cheese now? Which is cream cheese, is just a little bit lighter. When you pick up the bagel and the cream cheese, it doesn't weigh as much. That's all that means. There's less fat in it. Oh, I see. Less fat in the cream cheese, tons of fat in the bagel. Yeah, you know, we do boil it in fat, but that's besides the point, man. You just don't come into a bagel shop and just order a bagel just the way it is. I used to get it wrong. I used to walk into a bagel shop and I'd say, I'd like to have a bagel plain. And they'd say, you want a plain bagel? I said, yeah. And what do you want on it? No, I want it plain. All right, we're going to give you a plain bagel. And what kind of cream cheese do you want on it? No, I just want a plain bagel. Okay, we got that part. You want a plain bagel? We got that. You don't want the onion bagel? You don't want the poppy seed? I got that part of it. What do you want on your plain bagel? I want it plain. Got that part. What do you want on it? This goes on. It's like an Abbott and Costello routine. Millennials don't know what I'm talking about. Abbott and Costello, what is that, a clothier somewhere? Is that like in Filene's basement? Do you find? What's Filene's basement, by the way? Is there a man named Filene who lives down the street who has a basement and keeps strange things in it, like bagels? What's going on with you? Yay. Bought a container of cotton swabs. I got them right here. You hear it? That's a container of cotton swabs. I found this fascinating. By the way, these are double-tipped, which means there's a tip on both ends of these things. a cotton swab with double tips. So there's a tip on one end, and on the other end, there's another tip. Yeah, it's double tipped. Whoa, never saw these before. Actually, I've rarely seen a single tipped cotton swab, to be honest with you, unless they're industrial of some sort. I only see double tipped, so it's not a big deal for me. And it says, it lists, it says many uses, and there's four uses that are listed, and I know where you're going with this, because you know where I'm going with this. The use that we all use cotton swabs for is not on this list of four things. It says many uses, baby care. I don't know what that means. I don't know what you're supposed to do with the swab with the baby. Do you swab their ass with it until they're like bigger than a fetus? I don't understand what baby care would be. Beauty care. Oh, you're so beautiful. What's your secret? You are so beautiful. Cotton swabs. I use cotton swabs. What do you do with them? I don't know. They're double tipped. That's why I'm beautiful. Another use is health care. Is that like Obamacare? I mean, can I use a cotton swab and say that I have health care now? Ron, what do you have? You got health care, right? Yeah, I got a whole box of cotton swabs. And the last use, which I never thought of, but I guess it's true, says arts and crafts. How can you do arts and crafts without cotton swabs, ladies and gentlemen? I what do you build, cotton swab houses? I don't know what you do with the cotton swabs. Then it says caution. Oh, by the way, these are soft and hygienic. Then it says caution, and you know where this is going to go too. Caution. Do not enter ear canal. Sounds like a bad travel agency, doesn't it? It's for just $5,000 for 2 weeks, for 7 days and seven nights, which is 1 week. Travel down the ear canal. Says use only as directed, which means baby care, health care, beauty care, arts and crafts. Entering the ear canal could cause injury. I suppose it could. So could baby care. You could take a cotton swab, and I think you could damage a baby pretty good with it. So I think everything requires taking care. And then it says keep out of reach of children, which means I guess the cotton swabs have to go on the upper shelf. I don't know. Jack, he's got the cotton swabs. Call the police. All right, back up. I got cotton swabs. They're not supposed to be in my reach, but I got them. All right, Mom. All right, Dad. Get a gun with you. Then it says to clean ears, stroke swab gently around the outer surface of the ear. But don't use it in the ear canal of love. You know where that is, the ear canal of love, don't you? Oh, yeah. That's what we call the Erie Canal.
Gentlemen, did you ever notice that it always seems to be the ladies who pamper themselves with a spa day, with the mani-pedi and the facials and the massage? Do you ever think maybe you'd like to have a special day for yourself, but you are afraid it might be a little gay? Well, good news, gentlemen. Now you can have your own special spa day at Ramon Ramirez's Not-So-Gay Salon for Men. Let Ramon Ramirez take the stress off a tough day with a long, deep massage. It's not gay, it's therapeutic. After you relax, Ramon Ramirez will use special oils and lotions and maybe clean up some of your hairier man parts. It's not gay, it's hygienic. A lot of guys are doing it. Then it's time to kick back and let it all hang out in a long steam room session with Ramon Ramirez. It's not gay, much. So gentlemen, why wait? It's time for you to have a great day for yourself at Ramon Ramirez's Not So Gay Salon for Men. Please, no fat guys.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it too, but sometimes he says bad words.
That's not true. That's not true. Who told her that? Who told her that? Yesterday, there were kids throwing their ball in front of my house. Not their own personal balls. That would be disgusting. No, I'm talking about a football. They were throwing a football. The kids were no more than 8, 9 years old, I think. I'm a bad judge of age. Maybe they were 25 and 26. I'm not sure. But yeah, I slipped into my crabby old man mode, which is easier for me. I've been doing the crabby old man mode since I was 13. Although I'm a bad judge of age. I think I was 6. Not only do I not like kids playing on my lawn, I don't like kids playing in my driveway. I don't even like them playing in the street in front of my house. What if that football should go awry and hit my car, or hit one of my windows, or hit my mailbox, or one of the stones that I have on the grass, or one of the blades of my grass? I spend a lot of money on maintenance of my lawn. I want kids off of it. I want kids to respect me. I want them to say to themselves, let's throw a football back and forth. But let's do it in Mexico, far away from Ron's lawn. Maybe Mexico would be too close. If they throw the ball real hard, it could still land on my lawn. How about Guatemala? Or Chile? How about you don't have kids at all? How about that? How about parents should be spayed and neutered so that they can't have kids that could someday touch my lawn or throw a football in front of my house? Footballs are not made to be thrown in front of people's houses, by the way. They're to be used on football fields and football fields only. My mother had a condo in New York, in the Westchester County area of New York, and she had her condo on a golf course. In other words, she had a little backyard, and then there was a golf course, and you could sit on the deck of her house and watch these strangers walk by playing golf. You could practically wave to them. People who play golf are very, very tame people. Every once in a while, you'll get a few assholes who have had too much beer, and they're a little bit loud. But otherwise, they're fairly quiet, sophisticated people because it costs money to play golf on some of these golf courses, especially the ones that back up to condos. And yes, the benefit of having a golf course as part of your backyard behind your house is that it's usually very well maintained, usually better maintained than your own lawn. But there's a problem to that, and that's the fact that when you hit a golf ball, it could go anywhere. It could go in your head. It can knock you out. It can break a window. It can dent your siding. People basically have no control over their golf balls. I used to go golfing every once in a while with a friend of mine, John Shanahan, who does a lot of the comedy commercials and introductions to this program. And God love him. And I don't know if he's a religious man, and I don't know if God really needs to love him, but it's just an expression, and I said it, okay? Nice guy. Play golf every once in a while. And when John and I play golf, it's not to play golf so much as it is to have a comedy session. We make each other laugh. And whenever we play this course called Strawberry Hill, and it sounds like a golf course that was built by the Beatles forever, but it wasn't. And we played this course, and about every four holes, that's what she said, about every four holes there would be a little wooden pole coming out of the ground with a little box on top of it, and there'd be a sign, and it would say, wash your balls here. And we couldn't ever get by that little thing without laughing like little high school kids. You know, like, remember in junior high school when the chemistry teacher would draw a test tube on the blackboard? It looked like a penis, an upside down penis, and everybody would laugh. That's what the little ball washer statement stations are to me. You can't help but drop your pants and want to stick your balls in the washer. And my God, how can you play a round of golf without having clean balls? I mean, I agree with that entirely. But John and I thought, wouldn't it be funny if a bunch of golfers came by and here was one of us with our pants dropped with our balls in this ball washer. And then, of course, you would turn around to the passing golfers and say, but I took it literally. And the golfers would laugh. And that would be the end of the show. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest today is an interesting woman. And I've interviewed her on this program probably five times before. and her name is Becky Baines, and she's with National Geographic, which is the greatest publication ever. And if you have kids, first of all, tell them not to throw balls in front of my house or to play in my driveway. And secondly, get this for them for any of the holidays, or if it's not a holiday, for their birthday. This National Geographic Kids series is just incredible. It really, really is. And I'm a little bit older than a kid, and I still find it incredibly fascinating because it's basically my reading speed. to me, I have to sit down and concentrate to get through the Archie comics. You know what I'm saying? Hello, Becky.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Becky Baines is an editor at National Geographic Children's Books. And we've talked to you before. Always good to speak with you. What part of the country are you in?
I am coming to you from Washington, D.C.
The home of National Geographic, perhaps?
Yes, it is. This is where our headquarters is based.
Yes. So the book that I have in front of me is 100 Things to Know Before You Grow Up, and I don't think it's like directed at me, although I think I can use that information.
Yeah, you know, when I was going through the 100 things, I definitely learned that I have a lot of growing up to do. Yeah, okay. And I could improve upon a lot of these. Yeah. So it's never too late.
No, but that's a good thing. We all need to grow up every once in a while, especially if you're a presidential candidate. Hey, Becky, what is the target age group of this book?
So we like to think of our books for all ages, you know, from small children to my age.
Right, yeah.
our sweet spot is really 8-12, so that's kind of the audience we've directed it at. That's, you know, the sensibilities we kind of appealed to. So yeah. Cool. Good for the kids.
Cool. And as usual with all National Geographic publications and products, it's chock full of pictures and illustrations and the kind of things that draws not only kids to it but also adults as well. But it's an eye opening book. It's a feast for the eyes as usual.
Yeah, kids are definitely visual learners, and so the one thing that we've really learned is if you want a kid to pick up a nonfiction book, you know, a book that's going to kind of expand their horizons and make them want to learn more about themselves and the world around them, you have to make them as exciting and appealing as the fiction books that they're sitting right next to on the shelf. So part of doing that is we use this really, you know, every page has a ton of colors, and we don't like to talk about something unless you can show an image of it, because kids really just get so much more out of it that way.
Yeah.
So we have a great team of photo editors and designers who work really hard to put it together, and they did a pretty good job with this one.
Yes, they did. Now, is this intended, I guess it depends on the age of the reader, but is intended for them to sit down and read on their own or for a parent to do it with them?
Yeah, so this one is for a group, an audience that's old enough to kind of read through and tackle these on their own. But it's done in such a way that we've numbered these items 1 through 100, and so they can kind of dip in and out where they want to. They can tackle a task, or they can save it for later. They can skip it. So this is one that you could really give to your kids, and they could just spend some time, going through it by themselves and out of your hair for a while.
Yeah.
And it's just like a pretty fun, reading experience for them.
Now, it's not done in a countdown manner, is it? It's just 100 things at random.
Yeah, you know, some of the items are going to be more appealing to kids than others. Some are a little bit more things your mom would ask you to do, but we think we've done it in a fun and challenging way that will make kids more inclined to tackle, you know, how to pack a suitcase or, you know, how to use a screwdriver. But there are some that kids are going to want to skip over entirely. There's some they might want to do twice. So we've definitely left it open for them to be able to, you know, kind of use it to their own sensibilities. Uh-huh.
And the types of items that are in the book, the 100 things, give us an example of a few of them.
So we've kind of broken these down into three or four different categories. The fourth category is just for fun, how to, come up with the perfect secret handshake. But The first category is like how to's, and that's the, you know, how to wrap a present, how to use a hammer, you know, how to plant something and keep it alive. So those are kind of practical things. And then we have the life skills ones, the, you know, how to speak your mind, how to ask for help, how to try something, you know, to figure out something on your own.
Yep.
And then we have the more aspirational ones, which is like how to be brave, how to be, or how to turn an idea into reality, how to be grateful and stuff like that. So there's a good mix of all of them. And we think that if you can tackle at least a portion of each category, you'll be a pretty well-rounded little human.
Well, yeah, and it goes into some things are not as simple as how to wrap a present. Some of them are quite psychological, which is excellent. I mean, I'm glad we're introducing this to kids. But for example, number 24 is how to deal with change, which is something I never dealt with, apparently. and we're not talking about breaking a dollar bill. We're talking about change and something happens in your life where it's not the same as it was. And man, that's a question that adults have trouble tackling.
You know, some kids are easier, like, deal with change better than others. I think it has a lot to do with how much change you experience as a child. As a child, my family moved around a lot, so I think that I was more okay with change than people who kind of just grew up in the same place.
Yeah.
But this is one of those things that we're going to have to tackle throughout our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Like, things are not going to remain the same ever. Things are constantly going to change. As soon as you're in your comfort zone with something, something happens to shake it up.
Yeah.
And so this is a really good, it's step-by-step, how you kind of tackle this feeling of anxiety about change and, you know, including it's okay to be sad about it,
yeah.
You know, give it some time, find something in your new situation that's familiar, develop routines, and then celebrate, you know, small victories when you kind of start to adjust to that change. And so it's really great advice for kids who might be
really
struggling with that.
I mean, if kids can tackle that or at least be aware of that situation at a young age, then you set them up for life pretty well, actually, because I think when we were growing up, that was never introduced to us. That was never discussed. It was just deal with it. We didn't talk about it to anybody and not even our friends. So that's very, very cool. And the price of the,
yeah.
Yeah, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say there are a couple in here like that.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of like about being resilient and bouncing back adversity, and that's just something really good to introduce to kids when they're young, because that's something they will inevitably face when they're older.
Absolutely. The worth the book price alone is the knowledge how to balance a spoon on your nose, because I'm telling you, I don't know that. I don't know the answer to that. and this is the first time I've seen
a
book. It's the first time I've seen a book address this. Yes.
This is one that I actually mastered from a pretty young age, not nearly as well as the, we have a fact on here that the Guinness World Record for the number of spoons someone has balanced on their nose or on their face is 31, which is just incredibly impressive. But this is one of those that's kind of just for fun, but also you never know when you'll need to liven up at a party as an adult, and you can just kind of pull this trick out of your back pocket and impress the crowd.
Well, what if you're older and you go on a job interview and it's between you and another person and they say, which one of you can balance a spoon on your nose? And if you're not the one that can, the other person's going to get the job.
You know, that happens every single day, and it's just so not talked about. So I'm really glad you brought that up. It's really important to know.
It's important. It certainly is. How many people work on a book like? I mean, it's a pretty hefty book, and it's a small size, so the kids don't have to feel like they're picking up adult books. This is like kind of child size, but yet it's got that quality to it. Does this take like a large team of people?
Yeah, you know, this is a 6x6 book, and it's 208 pages, or I'm sorry, 256 pages, so it's perfect for kind of just like throwing in your backpack. But in every book we do, we probably have a team of about, you know, between the editor, the author, the, you know, everyone from the people who come up with the idea to the people who execute it, and like the production manufacturing side, there's probably 12 people that have had their hand in this book. And it takes about a good year from like the time that we schedule a book like this to the time you actually have it in your hand. So it's a big time commitment. It's a lot of people kind of coming together to create this product. And, you know, we think it's worth it in the end. We think this one's pretty great.
And here's the fun part. At the end of the book, it lists, it's got a checklist with a little box that you can check of the 100 things that we've gone over here. And how many of them do you think you have actually understood and mastered? And that becomes kind of fun. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that I'm probably hovering around the 50% mark, so I've got a ways to go.
Oh, that's much better than me. I ticked off two of them. That was about all I could honestly say that I was able to handle. But that's pretty good. As a matter of fact, this should be the college entrance exam. It really should, this book.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Because I don't remember, I don't think I've used algebra since I got out of school, or geometry, kind of not a lot. So this is better.
It's better. I agree.
Better. Are you working on another book?
Oh, yes. I'm working on 15 other books right now. So we've got a lot in the pipeline.
Well, are they short of staff, Becky?
No, well, technically we are. So check out our job site if anyone listening wants to apply. But we do about 100 books a year at this point, and we have a team of, I think there are 8 editors, and so, you know, we kind of divvy them up accordingly, and we've got so many exciting books coming out, and we have a website, which is kids.nationalgeographic.com, that, you know, you can find more information about this book and all the other books we publish, so if anyone's interested in seeing what's coming up, that'd be a really great place to go.
That's just a lot of fun. It's great for kids, and yeah, whether they can read it by themselves or pick it up by themselves or not, it's a great tool for the parents as well with the kids. It's a great thing. One more time, the website, please.
It's kids.nationalgeographic.com, but it's also available wherever books are sold.
Absolutely. Well, better be. Otherwise, Becky will personally cause a ruckus. And I know you can do that because that was number 102, which you didn't put in a book. Left that one out.
That'll be in the next one.
Right. How dare they not carry this book. Becky, it's always fun to speak to you. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Sounds like somebody needs to learn to make better choices.
You know, there are certain rules that follow this program. They're kind of simple. I talk and you be quiet.
Please be quiet.
Please.
Please be quiet. 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 Please be quiet.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Thanks.
If only it were that simple, and they taught kids that early. But the don't do it. You know why I hate Comcast? By Ron Van Dam. My 100 ways that I hate Comcast. One, way number 83 is that when you get the Comcast Xfinity thing, you turn on your television set. Did I say your television set and your cable box? And it lists all the channels. And you're scrolling through it and you see, oh, there's a show I want to watch. And you hit enter and a little sign comes up and says, you don't subscribe to this channel, you cheap son of a bitch. This channel unavailable. It just annoys me that they list all the things that I can't get because I can't afford to get it, or in general, it's not worth it for me to get it. I don't like to have things shoved in my face that I cannot have. And that's what Comcast does. here are all the channels. You click on one. Nah, you can't get it. You didn't subscribe to it, you little piece of crap. You can't get it. It pisses me off. I don't know how to put it any milder. I don't like that. I would rather they just list the channels that I can get and that I psychologically am no longer aware of the ones that I can't, instead of them shoving it in my face. Face shoving is not my thing. Not even sexually. Not into that. Not from you and not from Comcast. Do you have a bucket list? Never understood that. Bucket lists are all the things that I probably want to do before I die. What a happy-go-lucky thought that is. Someday I'm going to die, and here's all the things that I should really do before I do die. This is a list of things to do before you die. That is kind of morose. And half the things that I list on the list, I don't even want to do. Before you dive, Ron, you should skydive. Well, that could be skydying to me. Ron, you should get the experience of jumping out of a plane and falling through the air. Well, that might be an experience for some. For others, it would be, oh my God, I'm going to die. And that I don't want on my bucket list. Well, Ron, why are bucket lists all things that can cause you great harm? Not all are. We can get a little crazy. Before I die, I'd like to have sex with a French woman. That also could be quite caustic, because that might be bad for me too. As a matter of fact, Comcast tells me that I can't do that. I'm sorry, she's not available for you. You didn't subscribe to her. She's not available for you. That's what it's like for me, ladies and gentlemen, and I hope that's what it's like for you. Join me again tomorrow, and we'll do this all over again. How about that? Well, I mean, not this all over again. I'll do different subject matter. I won't say the same words exactly. Until then, I wish you peace. You enjoy today's show? No? Wait a minute. Well, hey, how come you didn't like it?
It was unbelievably painful.
Oh.
Whatever.